Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Such a great song. All right, there are many things that have evolved with time, especially the food that we eat, sometimes for the better and sometimes not. Let's take beer, for instance. Beer has been around and has had cultural significance for hundreds of years. But how much has the recipe actually changed? I mean, brewing it was certainly an art form, right? There weren't thermometers and all sorts of other equipment to help make it back in the day. So Dr. Susan Flavin and a team of researchers recently completed a thorough look at the history of food and drink in Ireland. So let's find out what they found. Dr. Flavin is an associate professor of history at Trinity College Dublin and joins us now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. This sounds like a fascinating project that you were working on. So what did you look at?
Well, it's an interdisciplinary project. So a team of historians and archaeologists and scientists came together to understand food more broadly in Ireland. So we looked at the archaeology. We mapped all of the plants and animal bones and pots in the archaeology. We looked at chemical analysis of the fats in pots to see what they cooked and stored. We even looked at the skeletons that were consuming, the remains of people that consumed food, to understand it scientifically using isotope studies. And as one part of that project, we reproduced beer to take a sort of a deep dive on one food in particular and try and understand it by bringing, again, lots of different people together.
Okay, how did you reproduce beer? Where did you even get the recipe from?
Well, that's probably one of that's why we picked beer, really, because people did drink so much in the past that they left a very good record of what they were doing because they had to make a lot of beer. So we used household accounts from Dublin Castle, where they sort of brewed every couple of weeks and wrote down everything, all the grains they used, how much they produced. And then we followed that rather than a recipe, because we all know we have recipes that we've never actually made things from, but we use the actual records of what was produced at that institution in 1574 and reproduce that.
1574. Okay, so why was beer so widely available and popular at that time? What purpose did it serve?
It serves as a very healthy drink. So there's kind of an assumption, we've all heard the assumption that people drank beer because the water was bad. It's not necessarily that the water was bad because you needed very good water to make beer, but it's that beer is seen as healthy in nutritional terms and in sort of the current dietary framework, so humoral terms. Beer was a warm drink. It balanced your constitution. It made you perspire and it was very nutritious. So it's seen as something essential in diet for working men, especially in that period.
Dr. Flavin, I'd say some people still believe that, right?
I think I've heard anecdotal evidence of people drinking quite a lot up until very recently, even at work.
Okay, so what was the recipe like? How different was it from a modern day beer recipe?
Well, I think like everything, we tend to assume that it's different, or it's different because it's Irish, for example. It had a lot of oats in it, so about half oats and half barley malt. Otherwise, it wasn't really that different. And I think, again, we look for the differences and say, oh, it's Irish, so maybe that's why there's a lot of oats. But regionally, places like Scotland, Northern Europe would have had very similar beers at that time. And again, today, you can still find oat beers in certain places. So I think, you know, trends change over time. It's not, we would recognize it. It was made with malt and made with hops. So it's actually not that different, just variations in terms of the other ingredients.
Okay, so then what was different about it? Or was there anything that was significantly different?
Well, how it's produced and how long it lasts, I think, because it's produced in quite open conditions. So in, you know, beer barrels, often in rooms that aren't even glazed with glass. It's produced under conditions that you can't control really at all. So you, as you said before, you can't measure the temperature, you can't control the environmental conditions. So there's a lot that you have to learn to do by sight or by sense, you know, learning how to tell the water's the right temperature by using your eyes, for example. So again, it's not standardized. So if you go to your pub today and get a pint, you're fairly sure of what you're going to get. But in the 16th century, even though brewers were expert in their own, working in their own environment, there was still variation. So it's just a less standardized, more variation, I would say, overall.
You really had to be an artist to be a brewmaster back in the day then, didn't you? Because you had these recipes, but you didn't have a whole lot of like modern day equipment.
Yeah, no, not modern day equipment, but people had more skills then, you know, to make these things. And that was probably one of the greatest challenges that we faced, was that, you know, you'd expect that a simple thing like a coopered barrel would be widely available, or a copper to boil the water in. But those skills are gone, really. So we really struggled to find people who could make these things for us in the UK or Ireland. So again, I think that's one of the unfortunate sides of this, the skills that people had then, we just don't seem to have today.
Okay, so you were trying to replicate the exact conditions under which to make the beer?
The conditions, the ingredients, and the technology. So we had to use even sort of a weaver, a basket wicker worker working at the museum, for example, was able to make the filtration system for us, weaving it from willow and that. So we had to really cast the net wide.
Wow.
To find the skills we needed. Yeah, everything was done to sort of as close as we could possibly get to recreating the beer.
Wow. Okay. I'm sure the basket willow maker was stunned to get that kind of request, right? It's probably not something they heard every day.
She wasn't. She was there when we actually undertook the experiment, so she could see it work, which I think was very gratifying for her.
Okay. So what was the end product like?
It was nice. It was a very light, mild, quite drinkable beer. And I guess you could taste the oats and the complex flavors from the bare malt, because we had to use, again, heritage ingredients, not modern ingredients. And so it was nice. It was about 200 calories in a pint when we tested it scientifically, and around 5% ABV. So it was actually quite similar, really, to a modern beer, which surprised us, because we did know that even from the accounts we used, people were drinking a lot of that beer.
Okay, so they were drinking a lot of beer back in the day, is what you were saying.
They were drinking a lot of beer. So at Dublin Castle, probably about 5 to 9 pints a day. And at other institutions, if people are working very, very hard, up to 14, 15 pints a day. 8 pints a day was a standard ration for a soldier in that period.
That's
which is
crazy.
Why we're so interested. It's crazy. So then that, of course, raises lots of questions. There's been an assumption that it must have been very weak, the beer, because people are able to drink so much of it. But I think we've shown that that's not the case, which raises lots of other questions about inebriation and intoxication in early modern period.
Right. It may also explain things that happened in history where you think, well, maybe the problem was they were drinking too much beer. Maybe that's
right.
Right. Kind of crazy. It's wow.
Yeah, lots of wars and that. Yeah.
Have you thought about selling it?
No, I think there would be a lot of challenges. I think you'd have to compromise a lot to make something you could sell. And we were really interested from an academic point of view. To do this commercially wouldn't really be possible, because again, the grains aren't widely produced, the technology, it's slow and very expensive. So it would be very, very expensive, and you'd have to compromise and use modern equipment or modern series. It wouldn't be the same thing. So I think my argument would be, what's the point if it's not a 16th century beer, then, you know, what are you selling? But maybe down the line, we'll right. have to think about that one.
So interesting. Thank you so much for telling us about it today.
That's great. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Susan Flavin, Associate Professor of History at Trinity College Dublin, one of this team of researchers where they were trying to recreate and study the food of hundreds of years ago, in this case, from the 1500s, recreating the recipe and conditions of beer. 5%. Okay, that's pretty good alcohol content, but also how many pints were they drinking a day? 5 to 9 or more in some cases. That is a lot of beer on a daily basis, isn't it? If you want to weigh in, send me at cknw.com. Would you drink that? Like if somebody recreated that and sold it, would you think, yeah, I would check that out? That's kind of cool.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.